How often do you read the ingredient labels on your food? Fresh produce, of course, has no label. Packets, on the other hand, can have lots of ingredients. Do you wonder about those ingredients that seem to be made up or that involve way too much processing to actually be a thing? Hydrolyzed soy protein is one such ingredient. There's a whole bunch of them, and they all sound impossible and not found in nature, at least in that form. What is hydrolyzed soy protein? Why is it made, and is it harmful? Is it beneficial? Might be a better question. Do you know what it is and what it can do to your body? The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 268, Food and Freedom, once a week for life. Hello folks, Dan Reed here. I've been in food as a cook and a head chef and head baker for most of my life. Even from scratch kitchens cook sometimes with canned foods. I've started to wonder what is in those cans, why is it there, and what does it do to us? There's lots of stuff in those cans that we probably are better off without. This series, What's in Our Food, looks at some of those ingredients to learn what they do, if anything, to us or for us. Hydrolyzed soy protein doesn't sound very good. No doubt the term hydrolyzed means a specific thing. Do you know what that process is? It might sound familiar. Hydrogenated, as if adding hydrogen atoms to fats, sounds close. Maybe it sounds like hydrolysis. According to the Livestrong website, hydrolysis of proteins breaks down large protein molecules into their smaller constituent amino acids, end quote. Okay. There are a few things glossed over there, or at least assumed, you know. Breaks down large protein. Well, we have to know what large means, and that's not this show, but how exactly does it break down a large protein? It's a chemical reaction involving hydrochloric acid, water, because hydrolysis is water-based, nitrogen, a microwave for heat at about 200 degrees, and time between 5 and 30 minutes, according to the LibreTexts chemistry website. That page has an egghead explanation of the process, and even the chemical symbols are written out, but honestly, it's beyond me. Breaking down into their constituent amino acids, I get that. The Livestrong page continues to say that chemical reactions break the peptide bonds. Ugh, okay, well, what are those? Khan Academy offers what was the simplest explanation, that, quote, peptide bonds are the vital link that connects amino acids to form polypeptide chains, which fold into functional proteins, end quote. All right. Every explanation I looked at before, I found this one was very sciencey. Not that there's anything wrong with the sciencey answer, but I won't understand what I'm saying, and that's not this show. So, soy protein is put in hydrochloric acid in the presence of nitrogen, microwaved at 200 degrees for 5 to 30 minutes. Now, there actually was another process with heat, but I'm going to avoid that one because I don't know what it said. During that process, water, even though it's in water, water is a product that is created. Hydrolysis is the chemical breaking down of things, something that has a chemical bond, into the parts that make the thing. clear as mud. Now, that sounds also similar to electrolysis, which is how water is divided or separated into hydrogen and oxygen, but I think that that's a little bit different. The Titan Biotech website offers that the hydrolyzed soy proteins offer, quote, are similar to other proteins in animal tissues such as meat and fish. Still, they do not have the same nutritional value as meat and fish proteins because they lack essential amino acids such as lysine and methionine, end quote. And just like that, we're in the deep end of the pool. Vegans almost demand that plants can give all the nutrition the human body needs to thrive. Skeptics disagree. There is a group of amino acids called essential because the body requires them for efficient operation and their absence impairs a properly functioning body. Now, as a slight sidebar here, there's every reason to think the human body gets on just fine, supposedly, without those amino acids. The long-term ramifications of not getting them probably is really crappy health when you're octogenarian, and it might just take that long. Now, I've asked a biochemist that question, how does the body get on without them? And that's not his particular area of study, so he wasn't really able to give me an answer, but it sounds like an interesting question with probably a really complicated answer. As a protein, we now see one big reason such items are added to vegetarian and vegan foods. I mentioned earlier that hydrolyzed plant protein is a processed ingredient. So I'm saying plant protein because there's more. There's soy, corn, wheat. I even read that they can do it with dairy. It is referred to as an all-natural ingredient, which is befuddling. I have not covered that term, all-natural, on the show, but it's used mostly as a selling point. The term itself seems to be meaningless. Labeling laws in the U.S. are something of a joke. Yes, the ingredient list needs to be in order of prominence or predominance, which is nice. Country of origin labeling is a flat-out lie, and terms such as organic and all-natural convey emotional comfort, but no actual information. There are more than a few things you can think of that are all-natural and organic, and never in a thousand years would you choose to eat any of those many things you can imagine. Calling something created in a chemical bath all natural seems to obfuscate the issue, but let's get back to the protein. In my bashing of the food labeling laws just a minute ago, to their credit, calling hydrolyzed soy protein hydrolyzed plant protein is insufficient since the source of the protein isn't identified. So they at least have to say, where did it come from? That probably is more for allergies than not, but knowing is good. When soy is processed this way, it produces 8 essential amino acids and 1 other amino acid. Now, there's a little bit of confusion, and I wasn't able to sort it out. I just said that it makes 8 essential amino acids, and just a minute ago I said it lacks 2 essential. There's only 9. So if it's lacking 2, that's 7. So in either case, it is not providing all 9 essential amino acids. Now, just as a refresher, amino acids are the building blocks of protein and vital to the various biological functions of the body, including giving the body fuel, building muscle and repairing muscle, enhancing the immune system, working with hormones, and other functions. So I mentioned essential. There are 9 of them and 11 inessential, I guess, or regular amino acids. The term may lead to a wrong conclusion. Those 9 are called essential because the body cannot make them. Chemists might use the word synthesize. They are as important as the other 11, but must be obtained from external sources, which is food or supplements. The other 11 amino acids your body can synthesize. So as a protein goes, soy is pretty good. Soy also has come under fire for some drawbacks, and hydrolyzed soy protein also has some drawbacks. One big issue with hydrolyzed soy protein is MSG. Glutamic acid, which is the G, combines with sodium in the processing and forms MSG. Now, MSG is naturally occurring, particularly in mushrooms, but it is not only a man-made thing. MSG is the thing, in some cases, that creates that umami taste. And mushrooms is one of the things that really gets that, is because, and soy will do that, because of the glutamic acid. Sorry, not a chemist here. Now, MSG is a flavor enhancer, and for that reason, hydrolyzed soy protein is often used to boost flavor in vegan and vegetarian dishes. So, the source of this episode was the inclusion of hydrolyzed soy protein in a packet of food I bought for a project I'm working on. I bought a bag of dehydrated potatoes for mashed potatoes. On the ingredient list, which is alarmingly long for roasted garlic mashed potatoes, includes 18 ingredients, at least half of them I can hardly pronounce, and I have no idea what they are. The Titan Biotech website offers this list of other places hydrolyzed soy protein might be found. They write, quote, meat products, soups, gravies, sauces, baked goods, desserts, snack foods, candy bars, chewing gum, and beverages. Missing, end quote. Missing from that list are the cosmetic uses for hydrolyzed soy protein. Hair products are popular places to find them, as well as skin creams. Also missing is infant formulas. Another issue is isoflavones. This can, allegedly, be the source of so-called man boobs or moobs, which can be a side effect of too much soy. Now, to be clear, I did not find a smoking gun about moobs. I'm also savvy enough to recognize that anything in health and nutrition that violates the mainstream thinking is deemed misinformation and simply removed if it ever was published in the first place. The sites that agreed there's no evidence to support moobs are all the approved voices of the approved opinions. Those isoflavones also have a cosmetic use, as I mentioned. The website Ingredients to Die For writes, quote, isoflavones appear to protect the skin against hormone-related aging, such as in menopause, and isoflavones can have estrogenic activity, for instance, if during menopause the body's natural level of estrogen drops, isoflavones can compensate by binding to the same receptor sites. As we age, our hormone levels drop, and our skin, the biggest organ, shows the results. Hydrolyzed soy protein helps bring back a youthful radiance in skin care, end quote. So maybe without even meaning it, they sort of suggest that moobs are possible. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. As a food, the main concern with hydrolyzed soy protein seems to be the MSG exposure and the allergies to soy in general. AtlasBars.com offers this about possible risks to hydrolyzed soy protein, quote, hydrolyzed corn and soy protein can cause digestive problems, particularly if consumed in large quantities. Research has shown that they can lead to intestinal inflammation, irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis, end quote. They did not include a link to any research, so I don't know what they're referring to. The site also mentions that soy and corn can be genetically modified, and that has been a big concern for some while. It seems that hydrolyzed soy protein is more benign than harmful. I remain skeptical. Atlas does offer some ideas for replacements of hydrolyzed soy protein. Yeast extracts or vegetable or mushroom broth are some solutions or substitutes. No doubt, the cost factor of hydrolyzed soy protein is cheaper than alternatives, which could be one big reason it is so predominant. Just like seed oils and sugar, hydrolyzed soy or vegetable protein is probably hard to avoid. Avoiding it means at least reading every ingredient label. It also means possibly paying more for already expensive groceries to buy products which use alternatives. Of course, cooking at home and make as much from scratch as possible is an option. As I said in the opening, even in the commercial kitchen where from scratch was the selling point, making ketchup or mayonnaise or vinegar or other staples from scratch is not practical or affordable. One thing the canned products have mastered is consistency. Hellmann's mayonnaise is always the same, even when it's called best brand. Avoiding sugar or seed oils is hard enough. Avoiding soy products is at least possible when you cook whole foods at home. Making your own mayonnaise is doable. Making your own ketchup is possible only in the technical sense, but in any practical sense, it is not doable. There is not, it seems, a panacea for packet foods. Pick and choose what you buy and what you eat. That's been the best eating advice for humans for the last hundreds of years. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I don't have a final conclusion. I'm going to avoid it like I have been avoiding it, and this particular project is changes the landscape of what's necessary, but that will be a show later on when this project is done. The text from this episode will be on the show notes page and will include hyperlinks to the pages I referenced. On the blog, there is a heading at the top of the page for Thanksgiving and Christmas recipes. If you haven't had leftover Thanksgiving pizza for Friday, you really are missing out on a great way to enjoy leftovers. That recipe is there, and others, including the pumpkin cheesecake, which everybody loves. Even Uncle Tony, who says he hates cheesecake, will almost certainly like this cheesecake. Not a guarantee, but it's well received. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.